Hi, all. Welcome back to Mindful Minds. For those of you who don't know, I have been on a break since September. And I just wanted to say a quick thank you to everyone who listens for being so supportive and kind and open to me taking a break. For those of you who don't know, I posted a video on TikTok in September and it got a little bit more attention than I was expecting. And I had a lot of really angry religious people in my DMs and my comments. It was a full-time job just to monitor the comment section. And then they started finding my personal social media accounts. And for me, that was where it got a little bit unsafe. And so I announced that I was going to be taking a break and coming back in November. And I'm going to release this episode because it's time sensitive. This episode is about voting. And so we talk a lot about with Ariana, talking about, you know, voting and abortion rights and all of that. This episode was recorded back in May. So keep that in mind as you listen. But my initial plan was to come back in November full force. And if you follow me on Instagram or TikTok, you've seen that I am actually going to extend my break until January 1st. So I will be back in January, the first week of January, with new episodes. I didn't realize how much I needed this break until I took it. And now that I've had the break, I started a new job. We had like some serious home improvement issues with our house. We've been dealing with mold. Like, it's been kind of a nightmare. And so I didn't realize how much I needed this break. And once I took it, it was really good for me and my brain to be able to not have to be so entrenched in talking about my trauma all the time. And so we are going to shift me coming back until January. So I will post this episode and then I'll kind of go dark until January again. In January, there are some updates in terms of how I will be coming back. So I will actually be switching to weekly releases. So we will be having a new episode every week, which holy shit, pray for me because that's a lot of work. And then we will also be launching a Patreon in January, towards the end of January. And that will be a whole thing. You're going to get, there's lots of different tiers you can choose from. It'll be bonus episodes, bonus content. We'll be doing book breakdowns like we did with The Body Keeps the Score. We'll be doing docuseries breakdowns like we did with Shiny Happy People. We'll be doing movie reviews of like goofy pure flicks movies and just like making fun of them and having fun with that. And so that will all be launching in January. We also will be launching a merch collection in January. So that has been in the works for the past like 6 months. I'm so excited about it. It's very fun. I love it. So you guys will be seeing that soon and we'll be able to purchase some of the merch on Etsy very soon here. And then other than that, I know that we talked about summer camp and a lot of you guys were really excited for that. We are going to be pushing that until 2025. So summer 2025. There was a lot of situations with that where it's a fantastic idea. I'm so excited about it, but there's a lot of like paperwork and stuff that I need to do before I start that in order to do it in a safe way. And I want to get some logistics behind it as well. Cause right now it would be kind of running off of a lot of free labor. And if people are okay with that, they're okay with that. But I'd really like to figure out a way for it to benefit the folks who would be volunteering a little bit more. So all of that to say, I want to push that back to 2025, but starting January, 2024, we will be having weekly episodes. We will be having a Patreon. There will be two bonus episodes a month. The merch will be dropping. There'll be a lot of like really fun new stuff. And we'll also be starting a Facebook group so that you guys can all communicate and chat and support each other. Because I know a lot of you have felt like one of the main things you've missed since leaving religion is community support. So I want to provide that as well. I also wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world. I've been offline, and so I wanted to just share and take a moment to express I unequivocally support the ceasefire in Gaza. I am not pro Hamas. I am not pro the Israeli government. I stand for the rights of Jews and Israeli people and for the rights of Palestinian people. And what is happening in Gaza right now is a humanitarian crisis. It is genocide. The fact that my country is funding and supporting this genocide is horrific. There are a lot of really beneficial resources online right now. ways to support financially, if that is not an option, ways to write letters to your congressman if you live in the US. And I mainly wanted to bring this up because I think it's important to know where people stand to an extent, especially when I have so much information online publicly, and that's what I do. I do think it's important to share where I stand. And I also think it's really important because of the fact that this podcast talks about deconstruction a lot. And if you grew up in the church, a lot of us were taught to unequivocally support the Israeli government, because that is a very American Republican stance to take. And a lot of us who grew up in the US and had conservative families or grew up in Republican circles, we were not taught to question the situation. We were not taught to educate ourselves or to view it from a lens of empathy. And so I think it's really important that if you grew up in the church and a lot of this is new to you and you haven't educated yourself on this, I don't think there is any benefit in shaming someone for that. But I do think it's really important to look into that and say, okay, I don't really know much about this. When I was young, I was taught the opposite. Like, let's learn. Let's unlearn the lies and the religious propaganda, and let's learn the actual truth. So I think that's really important. I also just wanted to take a moment to hold space for folks who are feeling really overwhelmed and triggered by the graphic images and videos and verbiage and intense language that's been shared online a lot right now. If you continue to follow me on social media, for my own mental health and for the mental health of my followers, I will not be sharing graphic images or videos or verbiage, because that is something that really deeply impacts my soul. And in my opinion, actually promotes, for me personally, I feel like I become desensitized to it. And that's really important to be aware of and fight against that desensitization to this type of violence. So I will not be sharing any of that on my page. So all of that to say, I hope you are safe. I hope you are mentally safe. I hope that you are being intentional with your media consumption. And if you have family in Palestine, my heart goes out to you. I will continue to promote resources to try to give as much education as possible. I'm also going to be really, really specific with what I share, because I want to make sure that I'm sharing things that are factually accurate and helpful, and not just sharing whatever I see, because I did that in 2020 and I also promoted misinformation accidentally. I hope you're all doing okay. It is a lot, and it can be really hard to process, especially because we all are living our lives at the same time and have other trauma that we're unpacking and other things that we're healing from. And so I hope you're doing okay. And with all that being said, it's one of the reasons why this episode is, I wanted to get this episode out, because voting is so important. If you live in the US, who you vote for in local elections, it does impact the higher ups. And so voting is so important. There's so many good resources that Ariana shares in this episode about voting and voting guides. Elections are today. And so, it's so important to vote. It's so important to get your voice heard so that we can get the folks out of the government, the US government, who are promoting this genocide and funding this genocide and voting for this genocide. It is so important to vote. So please vote. If you're not registered to vote, please vote. The link to register is in the episode show notes. Other than that, for a trigger warning, this episode does talk about abortion and abortion rights, and we don't go too deep into that. It is a topic of discussion, so be aware of that. And lastly, Ariana no longer works at Vote Pro Choice, but she works at a different Texas abortion fund, which is fantastic, and they're doing amazing work. And she was kind enough to want to release this and still, you know, promote it. Both are great organizations, and we'll have links in our show notes on how to support Vote Pro Choice. And Ariana is doing amazing work in Texas as well. But other than that, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. It is a great one. Hi, all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we're going to be talking about abortion and voting with Ariana of @ProChoice. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. We have not done an abortion episode in a while, and I wanted to give audiences a little bit of clarification. We are recording this in May, so we wanted to give a quick disclaimer that there is a chance that things have changed from when we're talking about them to when this episode is going to release. But all of that to say, a lot of my audience comes from religious backgrounds, and we were just talking before we started recording. A lot of religious folks grow up with a lot of lies and a lot of misconceptions. And I think a huge part of honestly, like just deconstructing as an adult is unpacking some of the bullshit myths that you were taught as kids. And a huge part of that is figuring out, okay, I was always taught to vote pro-life, 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 pro-life. Like, what does it look like to educate myself and figure out what's the like socially responsible way to vote pro-choice? And what does that look like? And especially with the state of abortion right now in the US, it's rough. And so I think approaching elections, having a specific conversation about abortion and abortion rights and, you know, medication rights and the criminalization of abortion, all that kind of stuff, and talking about what that looks like in terms of voting is so important. And so I wanted to have Ariana on to talk a little bit about that and give us a little bit of a guide, if you will, of like, okay, how do we navigate this voting season? So before we dive into the actual tips and tricks, do you want to give a little context on you and what Vote Pro-Choice is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Ariana. I use she, her pronouns. I am a South Texan reproductive rights and voting rights advocate. I started in college, you know, after I was in college during like Trump's presidency, and that was really rough. So I was like, I need to do something. So started organizing in South Texas on a pretty conservative campus. And it was amazing. Like, yeah, it was rough. Like, yeah, we had people praying over us and like telling us ugly stuff, but like getting students information they needed felt so important, or registering students. We got free period products in like the bathrooms on campus. Like those like small little victories felt so important. And then it's like, okay, I'm going to do this forever. And like now I work in the progressive space to get people elected, to help abortion funds, to amplify like community organizers and stuff like that is like my jam. And I'm lucky to work for Vote Pro-Choice. So we are a national organization that started in March of 2016. And it was really because like there is a lot of organizations that are working to elect pro-choice candidates at the federal level. They are talking about the federal level, but there is not enough organizations saying like mobilizing pro-choice voters to elect pro-choice candidates at the state and local level. Because people don't right. realize, like, your school board, what are your students learning about? Like, what does the sex education right. look like? That's your school board deciding that. To the sheriffs and judges are the ones deciding if someone has an abortion and they are criminalized. That is based on a judge or sheriff that you elected, but you probably don't remember their name like you remember the federal candidates that you voted for. We right. say it all the time, like, every single office can protect and expand reproductive freedom. We just have to make sure we are electing those candidates, because once again, often like federal races are so expensive, or those candidates lose by like huge margins. At the state and local level, a handful of votes is the difference between electing an anti-abortion person or a pro-choice candidate who is going to do whatever they can to protect your right to birth control, abortion, like all that stuff. Can be decided by less than $100 or by 5 votes, like, is scary and also powerful. And that is where yeah. Vote Pro-Choice comes in. Like, we have a national voter guide that shows you the pro-choice candidates, like we said, all the way down to that local level, who are the pro-choice candidates on your ballot. And it also includes recommendations from orgs like Working Families Party or the Sunrise Movement or any of those other organizations, because we know, as like Black women say, like reproductive justice, and like I'll have to like give a definition. So Black women define reproductive justice is that people deserve the right to have age children when they decide. They also have the right to decide they do not want to have a child. They deserve to control their bodies. And when they do that, they should also be able to raise children or not raise children in a healthy and safe environment. They have clean water. They're not going to be shot by gun violence. They're not going to have, they're going to have access to care. So when we are endorsing candidates, we are also making sure that they are also following those things. Or do they also believe that people should have clean air and water? Yes. Okay. Then they should include those endorsements for them, those other organizations, and include our endorsement and saying like, this candidate not only supports your right to abortion, but they think you should have clean air. They think your children should feel safe and should not face gun violence at school.
Right.
Those are all super important. So there's the our voter guide, and then there's like registering pro-choice voters, empowering pro-choice voters, especially young and people often left out of voting, trying to reach them and get them to the polls so they can make sure they're voting for pro-choice candidates up and down the ballot.
Yeah, that's such a phenomenal point. And I think the thing that's interesting about that too is, for me, as a person who was raised in a very religious environment, someone that was raised in an environment that I went to private Christian schools. And so the education was not good. Like, fun fact about private Christian schools, the education sucks. And I didn't take a political science class. I wasn't taught about the way that legislation works until I went to community college as like a teenager, and was shocked about the fact that I didn't know how the Electoral College worked and that I probably should. And so it's interesting because I think that a lot of people, especially since Roe, are really getting faced with the reality that local elections are very important. And we're watching these local candidates that were elected do horrible things and drastically impact a local community's access to abortion and birth control. And you're kind of watching, and I know, like, I even kind of was shocked by it. I knew that like local, you know, candidates can do certain things, but I think that a lot of people assumed that Roe wouldn't get overturned, and so the local aspects wouldn't matter as much. Where it's like, well, no, like, it's federally legal, so it doesn't really matter. And I remember when I had Moji and Marie of Abortion Access Front on like a year, I think almost a year before Roe was overturned. And we were talking about what happens if it does get overturned. And they were phrasing it as like, what happens when it gets overturned?
Exactly.
They were like, yeah, no, we have been prepared for this for a long time. And I remember sitting there being like, wait, what the fuck? Like, what do you mean when? Like, I was so confused. I was like, so convinced that that was never a reality that could happen. I was like very underprepared for it. And I think because of that, and because of just kind of the blinders that a lot of people had on, there wasn't really a lot of acknowledgement of like, oh no, my local elections are very important and my state elections are very important. It was kind of like we got it federally, we're fine. And I also was in college during the Trump presidency, and I think for a lot of folks our age that grew up during that time, there's a different level of urgency because we grew up in like arguably the worst presidency and just like this horrible reality of seeing someone that was so incredibly unqualified, so like blatantly egregious. And there was no let's hide how evil all of this is, when there had been a little more tact and it was a little bit more discreet previously. There's always been these huge threats to the rights of humans, and specifically like people with uteruses and people who are, you know, seeking abortion care. There's always been massive threats, but they were a little bit, I don't know, like Trump was just so blatant about it. It was just so blatant and so like slap you in the face, like just disrespectful, gross, perverted. It was a huge like, whoa, okay, like this is real. And so I know, like, that totally changed the way that I viewed voting. I was kind of a little bit in the group of people where it was like, oh, my vote doesn't really matter that much. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that really big mm-hmm. of a deal. And I also have grown up in a very, very, very Democratic state my entire life and have kind of always been in the headspace of like, yeah, it's not really going to make a difference. And then for me, like, watching the way that local and state elections have been the deal breaker for people literally getting care that can save their yeah. lives is like, oh shit. Like, okay, this matters a lot. Like, we need to take this seriously, which is one of the reasons why I was searching for an organization and someone to come on the podcast to talk about it. Because I was like, okay, no, this needs to be, I need to make sure that I have some information about this, because it's all fine and dandy to talk about unpacking like beliefs that are negative about abortion care and unpacking all of that. And I think that's so important. But then how are we going to actually put the action behind the words and make sure that we are genuinely protecting people? Even if it's something that you don't ever want to get an abortion, that's fine. But how do we protect people's right to choose if that's what they'd like to do with their body? And so, yeah, all that to say, how about we dive in? Because you touched a little bit, and I wanted to talk about the endorsements, because as someone who gets very overwhelmed by big decisions, voting is so fucking stressful for me. Like, the first time I voted, I was horrified. I was like, I'm going to make the wrong decision. There's so much reading. I don't know what to do. I was so stressed out. And I found like a voter guide and some endorsements. And specifically, like, I personally use the like Progressive Voter Guide quite a bit mm-hmm. when it comes mm-hmm. to elections, of checking in and seeing how much it aligns with my beliefs. And that was a huge like game changer for me. It was something where I felt a lot more confident and a lot less stressed. And I know that there are folks who can maybe have really strong, passionate beliefs about social justice, but get into the voting space and feel really overwhelmed and not really sure if they're choosing the right candidates. And it's also hard because candidacies can be really manipulative. And that's kind of the whole point, is like, you know, it's marketing. It's trying to make yourself appeal to wider audiences so that you can, you know, get an office. And so there can be some manipulation that happens where it's hard to see, you know, between the lines and make sure that you're making a good choice. And so I think it's so important and helpful in real time to have an organization like you guys endorsing candidates and knowing that someone is doing the research and making sure that they're backing candidates who are actually doing what they say they're going to do. So do you want to dive a little deeper into the qualifications to like for Vote Pro Choice to endorse a candidate?
Yeah, of course. So it is like, I mean, I'm in Texas, so I don't know. I know it's different in all the states, but like, I have to go vote in person. Like, I can't do mail-in. I have to go vote in person, and I can't take anything in with me. My phone has to be silent. So I know some other people will like, oh, I looked up like a candidate on my phone. Like, I cannot do that in like the state of Texas.
Oh my
like,
God. I didn't even think about that.
I like, if I want to bring in, I can bring in like a paper that I printed out and like highlighted the candidates, but I cannot like, and I didn't know that. I also didn't know that the first time I voted. So I was like memorizing like all the candidates and walking in there. And then my dad was like, you could have taken a paper in. I was like, oh, I mean, I was like 18. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you?
Like, so like voting is a great tool in our toolbox, but yeah, as a Texan, I can tell you it is not accessible. It is not friendly, especially if the hours are like hard and like, so we exist to make it as easy as possible for you to get into that voting booth and to feel confident about those candidates that you are voting for that are going to fight for you. So we have an incredible research team that researches. So if we're endorsing a candidate who is like already in office, we are researching how they voted, because there's a lot of Democrats that are not actually for abortion. They have voted for crappy anti-abortion stuff before, or they have voted for ugly voting rights things. So our research teams goes and researches like, how are these candidates voting on certain issues, especially abortion, especially voting rights? And if there's any red flags, they're not getting an endorsement from us, because that's it's not fair to voters. It's not fair to us. Like, just because they have a D by their name does not mean they represent us or represent pro-choice voters. Like, that's right. No. And then we're seeing it lately. Like, North Carolina, that Democrat who flipped the Republican Party.
I was just going to say that.
She did not get an endorsement from us. She did not get an endorsement from us. But like you were saying earlier, like, yeah, candidates lie. Candidates have like their own agenda. Like they lie. This candidate that we're specifically talking about shared her abortion story and has now flipped to the Republican Party, giving them the power to override the Democratic governor's veto. And possibly by this time this episode airs, we will find out if they successfully pass the 12-week abortion ban in North Carolina. That is going to devastate abortion access in the South if it passes. So that's why we research. Where are there any red flags with candidates? And then we have an endorsement application where we're asking them specifically, and we are asking, like I was saying, like county, at the county level, at the city council level. And the answers that we get back from candidates are so powerful and amazing, like especially at that local and state level. You know, before Roe was overturned, we got amazing responses, like whether it was like personal abortion stories or whether it was like, I know someone and like, that's their business, or like my mom. And like, but now we're seeing like, oh, well, I know the city council in Austin, Texas passed the Grace Act. Like if I get elected, like we're going to pass the Grace Act in this city. I'll give context. The Grace Act was passed by city councils and it tells the police officers to not prosecute abortion patients or providers. It makes prosecuting them their lowest priority. So we have candidates in their application saying like, I want to pass that, like give me the tools to pass that, or get me elected and I will pass that. So we're asking, and like I was saying earlier, we're asking them like, well, how do you feel about climate justice, or how do you feel about like gun reform? So we're researching you, we're asking you questions, and then you'll get an endorsement depending on how all that goes.
Yeah, I love that you guys approach it from such a holistic lens, because there's a lot of importance in looking at abortion as not just a, do you believe in the right for someone to choose an abortion, because there are so many other aspects that impact people's access to abortion, people's ability to raise children if they'd like to raise children. It goes so much deeper than just a yes or no, you know, checkbox kind of a thing. The North Carolina thing. I once again grew up in an environment where I was so incredibly naive and ignorant with politics because I had no education. And then I actually didn't vote until the 2020 election, despite the fact that I could have voted in local elections, because fun little thing about the way that the voting system is also just, you know, fucked up. I had a stalker and didn't want my address to be made public. And in my state, there were not really any resources that didn't require getting like a restraining order to protect my address. And so for a very long time, I didn't vote because I was like, I can't risk my privacy and my safety. And then it got to a point where I'd been long enough between the like event and, you know, when I was supposed to vote, and then it was the 2020 election, I was like, well, my privacy or like my human rights? Like, how do I pick between two like very important things? So I just decided to vote. And I was like, if I get stalked, I get stalked. Like, it is what it is. But it's a situation where there are so many things that prevent people from either feeling like they can vote, having enough education to vote, you know, feeling confident to vote. And I know for me, coming from a very ignorant background with political, but just politics in general, I didn't even know that candidates could do that in North Carolina. I didn't know they could flip. I like talked to my partner and I was like, what the fuck? Can they do that? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, wait, what? Like, how? And I said, I was like, does that mean that they could just lie and pretend to be on the other side so that they can get elected and then flip? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, wait, what the fuck? Like, how is that fair? That doesn't make any sense. And he was explaining to me, he's very well versed in politics, and explained to me, he was like, yeah, well, that's why it's so important that you vet the candidates that you vote for, and you don't just see, you know, Democrat, Republican, red or blue, and then vote. It's important that you actually do the research and make sure that you're voting for a candidate because of their history of what they've already done, or their history of the things they've been involved in and who they voted for previously. Because it's easy to hop on and just like put on a Democrat hat and say, yeah, I'm a Democrat. It's a lot harder to like fake an entire life of like being someone who cares about social justice. So it's a lot more difficult to fake your history and your background and your previous choices than it is to just in the moment say, oh yeah, I support da 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 da, with nothing to actually back that up. And that was something that I truly had never thought of. Like, it hadn't crossed my mind to, I don't know, I was just too trusting in the political system, to be honest. I was like, well, if someone says there's something, then they are. Like, what do you mean? And he was like, no, like, that's why it's so important to do the research and vet people, because it truly, people are manipulative and it can get real sketchy real fast. And unfortunately, like, there's nothing in place to keep people in the parties that they say they are when they're advertising and they're marketing.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing, like, even if people, like you're saying, like, you feel like it's so overwhelming, and then people make it, but then there's a lot of drop off. There's a lot of drop off as you get down the ballot, because all those federal races, the state races, they might have a Democrat. So if you're like, okay, I didn't research, but I'm going to just do all Democrat. The local races usually don't even, they're not party affiliated. So then you're like completely like, oh, I don't know at all. Like, if you did not have the time or the power to research, like, all those local races who have so much power over your daily life, they don't have a DNR by their name. And like I've told people, well, I have definitely had to guess before because yeah. you're in there. Like, I can't bring out my phone. Like, you're in there. You got to do it. And like, drop off is so bad. So once again, like, making sure, like, okay, voters are getting there. We do not want them to drop off, because your local people are the ones who are deciding, like, what your roads look like. Like, now what your abortion care looks like. That's no longer the people of the federal government. But it's hard. It is definitely hard. They do not make it easy on us, like, especially for Black and Brown people in the states that have been so disenfranchised. Like, it is not easy, for sure.
Yeah. And it's the having candidates that don't have public affiliations, that was so confusing for me too. I'd never been taught that that was something to prepare for on a ballot. And so I had a very similar situation, which luckily I have mail-in, so I can pull out my phone and look up a voter's guide and be like, okay, like, and Google like their name and then scandal and see if anything comes up that I'm like not okay with, and just like try to figure out like, okay, you know. And sometimes it is a situation where if it's a small enough local election, sometimes there isn't even information. You can search that person in Google and it's like, there's nothing that comes up. They don't have a candidacy website. They don't have social media. And it's like, okay, I don't know anything about you. Like, how am I supposed to pick a person? And, you know, and also I've had multiple times where I don't vote for anybody on those because I'm like, I don't know who to pick. And I don't want to accidentally give more votes to the wrong person because I don't know who I'm voting for. And it can be really anxiety provoking. And like you said, like, that could be the person that decides some certain thing with public transportation. And then public transportation is one of the main ways that people can travel to get abortions. If people, a lot of people don't have access to cars. Like, it's this huge snowball effect that all of these things are so deeply intertwined and intersectional. And I think a lot of the times the way that we're taught about just politics in general, but abortion access, is that it is this one thing. And I think why I grew up that way is because religiously there are so many, like, you know, one issue voters where they will just vote for anybody as long as they're pro-life. And there isn't the backup of, okay, well, you know, just voting for anybody because they say they're pro-choice and not actually looking into what that means for them, is there's a huge difference. Even some people will say pro-choice, and then what pro-choice means to them is, yeah, I mean, if you have to get an abortion, but ideally you wouldn't. And ideally we want to minimize abortions. And it's like, okay, well then that's not actually the person that I want to be voting for. Exactly. So it's so intersectional, and you're not taught that it's intersectional, which is makes it really confusing, especially for people who are in their 20s and are already out of college, have already, like, we're supposed to be taught this stuff in school, supposed to be taught this stuff in high school, and it didn't happen. And now you're on your own trying to figure it out as an adult, and it can be really confusing.
Yeah, absolutely. I always tell people, like, abortion, like, is not a one issue thing. Like, if I can't control my body, then, like, economically, like, if I get pregnant and I did not want to be pregnant, economically, that is changing my career, that is changing how I interact with my city, my politics, like, that, like, abortion is not a one issue. The power to control your body, your destiny, your future is so huge. That impacts every single thing that you will do in your community, in your state, because of that one, like, the inability to get care or the ability to get care. And I think voters, I think especially us young voters, are now, like, seeing that. I mean, we're seeing these, like, stories about, like, college students saying, like, I'm now having to really think about where I was going to go to school, because I really thought I wanted to go X state, but not being able to control my bodily autonomy in that state is actually terrifying. And maybe that's not for me. We're seeing that with medical students too, who wanted to, like, do, like, gyno, but they're like, well, I'm not going to get the same kind of treatment or the same kind of study in a state that has banned abortion than I would have before.
Right.
And that's terrifying, terrifying.
Yeah, no, I mean, I had talked to my partner about the idea of moving to Arizona for a little while. And then, like, some of the laws started coming out, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm chilling. Like, I actually don't think that's where I'd like to hang. And I mean, even the fact that people are having to have backup plans, of, like, there have been so many situations where I've talked to people, I've read about it, of people saying, yeah, no, there are now no, I now don't have, you know, the right to my own body. And I'm now moving, because I'm not going to just, like, sit here. And that's if you have the privilege and the income and the resources and the support to uproot your life and move, which obviously is not the majority of people. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, that's not a sustainable solution for every single person in an abortion hostile state to just move to a state that is an abortion hostile. That's not a solution. That's a shitty band-aid at best. And so trying to obviously solve the problems at the root of the issue, compared to just having band-aid solutions, is so much more important. And with that being said, do you want to talk a little bit about the legislative state of, you know, the right to abortion? Because I know that it, for me at least, I felt discouraged post Roe and seeing all of these, like, accounts on Instagram every day. I feel like we get another update about some law that has been passed in a state that is now limiting abortion access. It just feels like it's constant, and it can feel so discouraging and so frustrating, and almost like it's a ticking time bomb. And so do you want to talk a little bit about kind of where we're at and the ways that voting for pro-choice candidates can actually lead to progress, like the fact that we're not at a dead end?
Absolutely. So, like, the day we're recording this, abortion is banned in 14 states. And in a lot of states, we're, like, actively watching and waiting for judges and state Supreme Courts to, like, weigh in on other bans. So, and, like, we're talking about, like, the North Carolina case, like, will be decided by then, or, like, yeah, like, another state Supreme Court will rule, and that is either going to change that number. Ohio has, like, an elected judge blocked their 6-week abortion ban, and now they're trying to get abortion rights to their voters. So there is, like, so I know you're talking about, like, it's so easy to just read all the bad stuff. Believe, like, that's my job, like, as our social person, like, that's all I do is I have to read all the bad stuff, but I also we can talk about that, but I also do want to remind people, like, Michigan is like my favorite example right now. So they, for the first time, they flipped their, they had a Democratic governor with Whitmer, but they flipped their chambers. They always had Republican led chambers. So where even though the Democrat Whitmer was in power, Republicans would pass terrible things. She would veto it. Nothing good was getting done. But this last midterm elections, they flipped, and Michigan has passed such bold and progressive legislation. They rolled back that 1931 abortion ban that they had on the books. They have protected abortion access. Immediately after that mass shooting that they had, they passed gun reform, all because they flipped, because voters came out to protect abortion access, because Michigan was one of the states that got to protect abortion access. And so there are tons of bad examples, but then there are so many good examples. There is a lot of states who have passed shield laws to protect patients and providers. And that means that I'm from Texas. If I traveled to that state, they would not give my medical information to Texas if Texas was trying to prosecute me for an abortion. That shield law protects patients and providers if people go to that state. There are district attorneys in red states who ran and won saying that I am not going to prosecute abortion patients and providers. Like, that's it. In Texas, we've seen a lot of that. We've had mayors trying to give money to abortion funds so people can get out of state to get abortion care. So there is a lot of bad examples, but there's also states like Michigan. There is also like state and local leaders who have gotten so creative in trying to figure out, okay, how can I protect abortion patients? How can I get them care? How can we make it affordable? There is also like glimmers of hope. I think like New York was giving out abortion medication for free, like in a clinic. They're like, we have so many in this clinic, like come get it, no questions kind of asked kind of thing. Like, that's amazing. And sadly, it should have been happening before Roe was overturned. But now that we are in crisis, we are definitely seeing local and state leaders step up and being creative and thinking like, what more can we do to get people the care that they deserve?
Yeah, and that's always encouraging too. I mean, I know doom scrolling is real in any aspect of the world, of just, you know, looking at any type of news. There can be a very real anxiety and fear of just like, okay, everything's shit. Like, how do we deal with this? This is awful. And I think it can be encouraging to see, especially things like Michigan, where it's not just people are being good humans, or like, oh, you've got, you know, a clinic passing out something for free, which is fantastic. But it's really encouraging to see something that was a direct result of voters, not just of someone or an organization choosing to be good people, but it's a result of the action that people took. And, you know, we got a real result. And that's always encouraging, because I know that there, anytime you're a part of something that is so much bigger than you, and you're just one person participating in that, I think it can get really, I think it's very easy to feel like your little bit of action doesn't matter 100%. In the big scheme of things. And it's such a common narrative that we hear with voting. It's like, oh, I didn't vote because my vote doesn't matter. And I mean, I understand where people come from when they say it, but simultaneously, like, yeah, but if everyone's saying their vote doesn't matter, how many votes are we losing? And so it's something that it's always encouraging to see, like, oh shit, my vote matters. And that's something that we don't always feel like we see the outcome of, because there are times when, you know, other people's votes outweigh ours, and that can be really frustrating and really disappointing and discouraging. And I would just encourage people, especially we're intentionally going to release this closer to elections so that people hear this, feel encouraged and empowered, and feel like they have some resources to move forward and feel confident and have the guides and, you know, feel like they can make an educated choice in their voting. But I would encourage people to look for the ways that voting has impacted in a positive way, because I think that it has in so many ways. And it can feel really easy to just think that you're like a little grain of sand that doesn't matter. And your vote really does matter. It matters a lot. And it can be the make or break for people having human rights.
Yeah, like Kansas. I mean, every time abortion access was on the ballot in the midterms, it won. People came out and protected it. Like, Kansas was our first one that, like, people came out unapologetically protected abortion access. And now Kansas is a huge part of, like, people in the South getting abortion care. And if more people had gone like, well, my vote doesn't matter in Kansas, like, people in the South would be suffering even more so than we are. Like, so.
Right.
It's just, it's so, I know it's exhausting. I know it feels like we're going to lose. Like, we are going to lose a lot. Like, good candidates that you care about are going to lose. Stuff you care about is going to lose, but like, we have to keep going. Like, giving up is not an option. Our rights,
yeah.
Our rights to control our futures, our lives. And like, if we want kids, like, their rights are on the line too. Like, we have to keep showing up and showing up for our communities. Like, that is our only option, truly.
Yeah. And do you want to talk a little bit too about if you are in a state that is historically has been, you know, really Democratic, or it has had, you know, a lot of movement in protecting abortion in the last year? Do you want to talk a little bit about, obviously, vote in your state, but what are some ways that voters in states that are not abortion hostile can support folks that are in abortion hostile states?
Give money to abortion funds is always going. That's always a good thing. Whether that's your local abortion fund or like abortion funds in Texas, like, give money to abortion funds. Can you give your money or time to an abortion fund or abortion organization? Clinics in blue states are extremely overrun right now because they are having to bring, they're seeing so many people from red states. So can you go be a clinic escort? Can you help with PACs or anything like that? Because clinics are so overwhelmed with everyone coming in from out of state. Also, just wanting to remind people, like, you can live in a blue state and your abortion rights are not protected. We have that, like, abortion medication case that is, like, going through the courts right now that will impact everyone, no matter what state you live in. So you have to care. Sadly, you have to care about Texas, because a lot of bad legislation moves through Texas, and they intentionally do it, that they run it through the ledge. They, like, it gets banned by a court, and they want to get it to higher courts. They want to get it to the Supreme Court. So you should care about who is getting elected in Texas, because we are all in this together. Like, the case that overturned Roe was a case out of Mississippi, and that is now impacting all of us. And it was state legislators. Right. If, like, we had given more money to progressives in Mississippi who were running, and, like, would that law had ever been written? Like, would they have ever, like, gotten it to the Supreme Court? Like, so I'm like, I see it all the time. Like, as our social person, like, a lot of people comment, like, crappy things about, like, red states. I'm like, okay, instead of your hot takes, why don't you help us build progressive power? Why don't you donate to candidates? Why don't you get involved? Like, why don't, even if it's like showing up for a phone bank for a progressive candidate that you can do remotely, like, doesn't matter what state you're in, like, you can help. And, like, we're all in this together. Like, bad legislation that moves and passes in Texas gets replicated in other red states too. And, like, we can stop it by ensuring that these anti-abortion extremists or anti-trans people are never elected in the first place. But we need your time and energy and love instead of your hot takes.
All right. For those of you who have been here for a bit, you've heard me talk about my pup, Stevie Ray. When Stevie was a puppy, she had some undiagnosed food allergies that resulted in her being super itchy. Luckily, we found Scouts Honor. Scouts Honor's products are probiotic and are lifesavers for pups with sensitive skin, who are prone to itchiness, or if you just want your pup to have the softest fur ever. We exclusively use Scout's Honor and have for the past 2.5 years. We love their unscented shampoo and conditioner and their probiotic paw spray, which is amazing for Frito-Toe pups. On top of their amazing products, with every bottle bought, they provide a meal for an animal in need. If you have a pet, I would highly encourage looking into Scout's Honor. And listeners of the podcast can use the code MINDFULMINDS for 20% off of a purchase of $50 or more. Again, that's code MINDFULMINDS for top-notch doggy grooming. I have been asked from so many people, how did you start your podcast? The answer is simple, Buzzsprout. I had no production experience when I started the show, and I used Buzzsprout's blog and website to teach myself how to get started. Buzzsprout not only lists your show on all major streaming platforms, but you also get access to a website, audio players, and custom sound bites. If you are looking to launch your dream podcast or you're looking for a new platform, Buzzsprout is the way to go. You can follow the link in our show notes to receive a $20 credit towards your membership, and you will be supporting our show. Happy podcasting! Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a phenomenal point. And I think the thing too is, I think that when you get super, super comfortable in the idea of like, well, my state's Democratic, we're good. Your state might not always be Democratic. Yeah. Like, that's one of the importance of voting and keeping it in a space where you have your rights. It can get really easy to kind of get cocky a little bit and mm-hmm. be like, oh, that would never happen here. And I think a lot of people thought Roe will never get overturned. And it's like, well, here we are. So the unthinkable has happened and it continues to keep happening. And so it's important to not get complacent or cocky and just assume that, oh, that would never happen in my state, or, oh, that would never, that's just a Texas thing. Texas mm-hmm. is wild. And it's like, okay, well, like, great. Yeah. Great hot take, but why don't you try to keep your state safe, and then also help the folks that are in unsafe states? Because I think the thing that's really interesting is, even if people love to like shit on Florida, you know what I mean? Love to shit on Florida. And that's sure, whatever. Do they have a lot of like awful politicians? Are there a lot of people who are very conservative? Yes. Simultaneously, you have to realize that there are also so many folks that are fighting for their rights, fighting for the rights of other people. And when you group an entire state together as being XYZ, you're ignoring all of those folks. And the other thing, this is a hot take of my own. It's not my own take, but there's also the reality of conservatives also deserve abortion access.
Yep.
Even people that you disagree with politically still deserve the right to their own bodies.
Yeah.
And so even if they are not agreeing with you politically, you're also still fighting for them and for their rights. And this isn't, you know, access to abortion and healthcare and gun reform and, you know, accepting the LGBTQ plus community. All those things are not like, oh, we only give those rights to people who we agree with morally. Those are things that everybody deserves. Yes. And that we want to fight for everyone to get those rights. It's not just the people you agree with or the people that you align with politically. And so it can get really sticky and really inappropriate, in my opinion, to start, you know, throwing rocks at people and saying, oh, ha, 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 look at this state that I think is, you know, look at all the bad things happening. It's like, no, no, no. We're not fighting for this just for the people we like. We're fighting for this for everyone. That's the whole point. It's not about if you reach this moral checkpoint, you get access to abortion.
Yeah.
That, we're not trying to do that. There's not qualifications to whether or not you get access to, you know, protecting your own body. That's not how that works.
Yeah. Even more so, like if you know, like you're in a blue state and you're like, oh, like my state ledge is like going to be blue no matter what. Okay, that means you have money and time to give to some candidates in Florida, to give right. to flip some seats in Texas and Florida. And like, we'll tell you what seats like are need to be flipped. But like, there are so many organizations who will like intentionally, like, we can flip this seat. We just need money and we need people to care. Like, you can be that person instead of, yeah, on Twitter making your hot takes that are like harmful and like, yeah, like exactly what you're saying, like, not appreciating the people. Like in Texas, we've had a very cruel legislative session, and the videos that I see of advocates going to the state ledge and like fighting so hard to stop anti-trans bills, to stop racist bills, to stop is just so, so beautiful. Like, we care so deeply about our state and people. We just need people to care with us. We just need people to care and show up with us.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk a little bit too about, I guess about, let's, we can kind of end a little bit here on voting guides, because you guys have a voting guide. Do you want to talk a little bit about, do you guys have specific ways that people can help your organization? Do you want to share a little bit about where to access voting guides, how, if you can donate, how to donate, all of that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So for like major elections, like for midterm elections, we make a voter guide. And like I was saying in the beginning, we share like all of like not only our endorsement from, but endorsements from other progressive organizations. So we should have that voting guide out in November. But like right now, as we record this episode, tomorrow, Pennsylvania and Oregon have important elections. We have made endorsements in those races. So we have that on our website. So we have that on our social media. So even if we can't make a full on guide because it's, you know, because of timing or whatever, we will have endorsements for races. There are so many elections coming up. There's probably election coming up in your area that you don't know about, that it's a local race. Like, check out our social media, check out our website. So it's all Vote Pro Choice. And that, see what candidates have we endorsed, what races are we looking at, what states are we talking about. We are actively raising money to also register voters. So like, we have our voter guide, we have our voter endorsements, and we are also raising money to register pro-choice voters, and we would love your help. It takes as little as $2 to register voters. We are especially focusing on Ohio right now. Like we're saying, they might have abortion on their ballot. So we need as many pro-choice voters to get to the polls and vote. So we're registering voters. Like, $2 can make a huge difference and help register some voters. So we're doing that. So on our website, I will like send all the links and get them shared. Anything helps, whether that's donating, whether that's sharing a post, whether that's like, oh my gosh, I have a friend in Pennsylvania and they didn't know they have an election coming up. Sharing a post, like doing something like that is so, so important. And it can help. Even if you feel like it doesn't, it really can.
Yeah. And then I, my listeners who have listened to previous abortion episodes on this podcast know this, but my website, I've also got a pretty big master document that I probably need to update a little bit, because we made it right at the like overturn of Roe. And so it's probably a tiny bit outdated. But there's a master list of abortion funds to donate to as well, and links and all that kind of stuff. So folks can find that as well, of just, if you're looking to support abortion access via funds, there's that. And I know I always plug Abortion Access Front and Midwest Access Coalition, just because I love Moji and Brie. So you can also go to their things and figure out other ways to donate and just help. Yeah. And even just educational things. They've got lots of really interesting resources to just learn and share, even if you don't have funds. And then I wanted to end on, I don't have this on our outline, so I apologize for throwing it at you, but I saw on your guys' social media that you guys had a post talking about your plan for the future of 2023, 2024, and looking forward. I know, myself included, a lot of folks have felt, like we said, overwhelmed, scared, nervous about what living in the US is going to look like. Do you want to talk a little bit about your guys' plans for the future and kind of what you're gearing up for as we move towards the 2024 election?
Yeah, we say all the time, like, a lot of people are already thinking about 2024. And like I was saying, there are elections in 2023 that are just as important as 2024. So for 2023, we have Kentucky, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Texas. In like Pennsylvania and Texas, and though there are a lot of like local small elections that are like I was saying earlier, like your city council who could pass the Grace Act, or district attorneys who are going to protect you or your provider from being arrested for abortion care. The major election that people usually think about this year is also going to be Virginia, and that is going to be major. The Republican governor has promised if he flips the Senate, he wants to pass a 15-week abortion ban. Once again, that would be devastating for abortion access in the South. So we can't skip to 2024. Like, every single year, every single election is critical. Same thing in Kentucky. We have to protect the Democratic governor, or else abortion access can change and be worse. So we also have to do a lot of registering voters. So we're thinking about like Nevada, Ohio, Arizona. Ohio is going to put abortion access on the ballot. Okay, what else can we do? We also have a lot of our goals is like to expand the pro-choice, like making sure voters are comfortable voting and they are registered to vote before we get into 2024. Like we should not be waiting until September 2024 to be like, oh, first time voters, hey, like we need to already be talking to voters and building that like confidence and that like that plan to vote. Waiting until the summer of 2024, September of 2024 is too late. We need to start. We have to keep reminding people, get plugged into your local elections, get plugged into community organizing, or thinking about, just at least thinking about like, that is something that's going to come up and that's going to be important to me. Just even that thought is better than just like, oh, whatever, I'll think about it a week before, a month before. Like we can't do that. It is too crucial. And that's why we have all these plans to like register voters, talk to them through digital campaigns, having the ball rolling right now and not waiting until it is too late.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. And I mean, if you're listening too, like follow voting organizations and follow Vote Pro Choice, like follow them on Instagram and on social media, because I think that a really easy way to kind of stay plugged in and continue education is if you're scrolling through your Instagram feed and, you know, every few posts you get a little nugget of information and a little reminder and something you can share, something you can kind of get. I know for me, like a huge part of my, honestly, just unpacking a lot of the negative views and shame that I had surrounding abortion, there was for me, and this is kind of a funny thing because I've talked so much about religious trauma on my page and about, you know, deconstructing beliefs. And the thing that has stuck around like more than anything else that I was indoctrinated with is the pro-life shit. Like, it took me so long to unpack the idea that getting an abortion is not killing someone. Like, it was so ingrained in my brain. And there was so much shame and fear mongering and guilt that I was indoctrinated with, that a huge part of me getting to a point where I felt comfortable and confident enough to vote pro-choice was constantly exposing myself to truth about abortion and following these organizations, following accounts that talk about abortion stories. Like, So I Had an Abortion is a great account of like learning about real life stories about abortion. And it makes it a lot easier to, I guess, be acquainted with the reality of it and not just kind of sit in your own lane and have the shame and the fear mongering and the indoctrination still rolling in your head. Mm-hmm. And for me, that prepared me and enabled me to be able to feel comfortable enough to vote pro-choice and not walk away shaking with shame and fear and guilt. And luckily I was able to do that leading up to elections so that when I got to the election and I needed to vote, and even in local elections, I didn't have the same fear and anxiety, especially if you, like you said, if you're in a state where you can't mail in and you have to, you know, have the confidence and the ability to do it in person, that shame and that fear can really creep in at weird times. And it's just like unpacking anything else, where the more you expose yourself to something and the more you see it as just humanity and normal and not villainizing people, it really can help with your confidence levels. And then I also wanted to just clarify one thing with you. Can you explain a little bit to people who maybe haven't listened to past abortion episodes on the podcast about why losing abortion access in one state is going to impact the entirety of the South? Can you explain just a little bit about like what that means?
Yeah. So like right now, like a lot of the South is like, we are the states that don't have abortion access. So like I was saying, like if they pass that, like if you like think about like the United States in a map, if they pass that like North Carolina one, you are, and which currently has, it's like 20-ish weeks. So a lot of people have been from the South who like they live around there and they don't have access. They've been going to North Carolina. Once they cut that down to 12 weeks, that is going to be extremely hard. It is taking a lot. Abortion bans force people to be pregnant longer than they want to, especially without Roe. So like now, right now, maybe before Roe, you only had to wait 2 weeks to get an appointment. Now you have to wait a month plus. So abortion bans are actually forcing people to be pregnant longer and to miss these deadlines, these 12 weeks or 15 weeks, whatever the ban may be. So if we cut it down to 12 weeks, people are going to miss that because they're going to be, because of, do they have the money to travel? If you're traveling from Texas, how long is it going to take you to get that money to travel? Can you get time off of work? How long right. is it going to take to get an appointment? So say if they were to pass the 12-week one in North Carolina, and then the governor passes in Virginia, passes another one, either 15 weeks or even crueler. And then the six-week one goes into effect in like Florida. Like every time we shrink access, like now that forces more people in Texas to go to New York or California where you live and where you are going to access care. Now we are all going to be waiting a month longer. Now right. we're all going to be putting more pressure on the clinics and the abortion funds. So they might have money for XYZ people, the first three people that call them, but then they've run out of money because they're having to pay for people to stay longer in the state. They're having to pay for more people to go to California and travel longer distances. It is truly, truly so devastating how long people are being forced to wait, how much more expensive that gets. Mm-hmm. And with all of these bans, like every time they cut, even if it's only like a week that they're cutting access, that is making such a difference on someone being able to either raise the money or to get to the state because of work or because of they already have children. They needed to access childcare and they could access it
right.
this week and they couldn't access it that week that they got their appointment. And now what do they do?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, even situations like, I mean, we've talked already about if you miss that and then you're forced into giving birth and then we're facing, you know, people being tossed into poverty because they can't afford to support themselves and a child. But even with those, with the bans and, you know, everyone flooding to one location, you also have clinics that are either fake clinics that are acting as, you know, real clinics and then are further pushing back the timelines, or you have clinics that have waiting periods. And then, you know, you're dealing with yeah. the, oh, we have a 12-week ban and we also have a 72-hour waiting period. Yeah. Then it's like, okay, well, now I have to try to get an appointment within this very small period. Not to mention that a lot of people don't find out that they're pregnant until like, you know, a lot later. And so it's even that 12 week, you might not even know you're pregnant. Like you might not find out you're pregnant until 14 weeks.
These are made up timelines. Yeah. Just to point out, like these 12 weeks, 15 weeks, they are made up timelines by the GOP. Like I think Lindsey Graham, when he did his like national abortion ban, he was like, he literally said something like, well, I picked. Like there's no science are behind these bans. They right now the Republicans are scared. They see that pro-choice voters are really motivated. So they're like compromising. And what we always say is like, there is no compromising on our bodily autonomy, on our right to like decide right. what is best for us. Like these are made up timelines that they have just been picking, but they're not based in science. And they are often just harmful. Like you were saying, like, okay, people don't find out they're pregnant until after 6 weeks. And now they have to act very quickly to get care, which is really hard when now we are so limited on what states can they can get into quickly, or do they have the money, and all of those, like all of those challenges.
Right. Not to mention the funds. Like, I mean, Midwest Access Coalition, their entire, you know, they're not an abortion. They don't necessarily pay for, they're not funding the actual abortion clinics, but they are funding travel and childcare and food and lodging costs and all of these things that take people to travel. And then you have organizations like that. There's only so many organizations that are trying to provide funding for people to travel. And when now you have such an increased level of people that need to travel, you know, it's just this like horrible cycle where there's just more problems and it just keeps increasing. And so, I mean, I will post all of the resources that you have. Do you want to share a little bit just about where people can find you guys too, just so that people can find you guys online and follow you and amplify all of your work?
Yeah, absolutely. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are on TikTok. We're on Instagram. Come share, come like, come follow. And like, I think it was such a good point what you're saying, like, even if you only, cause you know, the algorithms are funny. Even if you only see one of our posts or one of our posts from Abortion Fund every now and then, at least it's like in your head, at least you're thinking like, oh, like maybe I haven't given $10 to an abortion fund in a while, or I haven't thought about like supporting a progressive candidate in Tennessee in a while. Like maybe I should do that. And maybe if it's seeing one post, like gets you to do that every now and then, like that will make such a huge difference, especially at like this local and state level. So just remember that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, social media can be awful and it can be great. And I will say like me following the number one ways that I started to unpack and unlearn shit was just following a whole bunch of accounts that at first glance made me really uncomfortable. I was so used to a certain like things being taught to me as bad and being villainized. And one of the ways that I started to unlearn and unpack was just like, I'm going to follow a whole bunch of accounts that at first glance, like my gut instinct is kind of to like cringe and feel kind of icky and uncomfortable and weird and shameful. And the more that I saw those accounts, the more that I learned about the humanity of just humans, honestly, and the idea of villainizing people started to fall away. And I started to see how passionate people were about access. And even like having Moji and Marie on the podcast, that was so uncomfortable for me the first time I interviewed them, because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm talking about. I was raised in an incredibly pro-life household. This is all still kind of awkward and like kind of abrasive for me. It just feels weird. And having conversations with real humans who had real knowledge and science and not just these random sayings and fear-mongering, honestly, lies, it was so enlightening and really started to help me unpack and unlearn a lot of the shit that I was taught, and really helped me be like, okay, wait a second, like this is not this horrible, you know, awful thing that I've been taught that it was. And social media is a huge part of that. And I think that that's a great way to slowly start to kind of deconstruct your beliefs just as a human, not even necessarily as a religious person. But if there's just also societal shame around abortion, whether you've been raised religious or not, and it can be really helpful to just start to unpack some of that. And then, like you said, then you get the little reminders and you think, huh, okay, like I'm a little more familiar with this now. Maybe I can, you know, share a post. Maybe I can donate some money. Maybe I can, you know, oh, they're asking for people to email these senators. Maybe I can do that real quick. That's pretty easy. And it starts to really open the doors and make action look a lot less stressful and a lot less of a commitment to it. Like social media, there's so 100%. Many like little tiny ways that people will give you to help. And it's like, oh, okay, this will take me 5 minutes. This isn't that big of a deal.
100%. Just sharing someone's story. Like we keep seeing those stories about patients almost bleeding out or something like that. And if that really impacted you, sharing it. Like, yeah, who do your friends and family, like members, even know that's going on and like how terrible it is? And once again, like why these abortion bans? They don't just impact people who don't want to be pregnant. They are also impacting people who genuinely like want to have children and are almost dying because of extremists who don't care. It's sometimes people are like, oh, social media is silly. I'm like, yeah, but it can be so powerful in so many other ways.
Yeah. And if you have access to social media, why not try to use it in a way that's helpful? Like, there are lots of ways that it's used in a very harmful way. try to get on the bandwagon of using it in the helpful way. But yeah, well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate all that you guys do. And I'll share all of your guys' stuff. This has even been super educational for me. Like I said, voting is something that like I just was not taught a lot about. And so I kind of had to fumble my way through it as an adult. And so I really appreciate the time and effort that you guys take to help educate people and help protect people, because you're fighting for everybody and you don't get half of the amount of recognition that you should. And so I really, truly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. This was so great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And then we can find you at Vote Pro Choice. And then is it voteprochoice.com?
So our website is voteprochoice.us, but all of our socials Perfect. Are Vote Pro Choice. Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I will link everything in the episode notes. You guys can find everything from Vote Pro Choice. You can find voting guides, all of their endorsements. We'll link all of that below so you guys can feel more educated and feel more confident when it comes to voting season.
And that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. That is especially helpful right now because we did get review bombed a little bit by some angry Christians. So if you have the time, that's really helpful. You can also follow the podcast at Mindful Minds Pod and online at mindfulmindspod.com. And if you missed the community update, we are at Mindful Minds Pod on TikTok as well now. So Instagram and TikTok have the same handle. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys in January.